Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Western edge of the country. Joining me from the eastern edge of the country is Katie Beasley. Katie, good morning. Welcome to All Marine Radio.
Good morning.
How are things in beautiful North Carolina today? Nice. Cold. It's cold, right?
Sunny. Sunny and a little bit chilly.
All right. Now, Katie was at the came to the post-traumatic winning thing last week, and she wrote a really cool email, and I didn't have a chance to read the whole thing until Saturday when I was flying back, and so. As we kind of move the lens around, you know, doing it for large audiences the first time, I wanted to have her on and get her thoughts about it. But before we can do that, we have to learn about you, Katie, so we can decide if we should trust you or not. You're so born and raised where?
I'm from the eastern shore of Virginia, so the bottom of the Delmarva Peninsula. Atlantic Ocean on one side, Chesapeake Bay on the other, and rural farmland in the middle.
Really? Why would anybody want to live there? I mean, isn't that thing hammered all the time by storms and stuff?
No, I mean, more nor'easter than hurricanes. You know, we always have a fair share of excitement during that season. But for the most part, it's just a beautiful rural area to live.
So
the economy struggles because there's no industry.
But, right. So what do they grow out there on that strip of land?
So in the 30s, it was the largest producer of potatoes in the country.
If you ask people like something about their community, you know, like we're the home of cream of wheat. Like what? Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Yeah. Campbell Soup's factory made tomato soup in Sacramento, California, not far from where I grew up. So, and the gold rush was there. So,
I'm
potatoes.
Sorry, say that again?
No. Well,
now we're the like one of the largest aquacultural communities, clams and oysters.
What'd you call it? Aquaculture?
Yeah. So, just like literally growing up. Like a crop, which would be a clam or an oyster in the bays and the waters that surround the eastern shore.
So you guys promote the SpongeBob thing, yes?
Sort of. So, you all know, right. The Chesapeake Bay is this, like, dirty, dirty place because of all the rivers from up north that feed into it. And so it's sort of like a win for everybody because the farmers of that industry, you know, are making a living, but those bivalves are also cleaning the water, so
okay.
It seems to be working.
Okay, so you grew up there. Did you go to college?
I did. So, you know, senior year, my dad was like, I want you to go to Virginia Tech. Like, I want a football team. Like, I want to buy in. And I was like, oh, I'm going to the College of Charleston. He's like, there's no football team. It's 8 hours away. What are you doing?
And so tell us about the College of Charleston. First of all, you said Charleston, right?
Yes, Charleston, South Carolina.
I've never been there, but I've heard it's an absolutely beautiful city.
Which is sort of the problem, right? So you go tour most of the schools in Virginia, and they're all old and beautiful, but you get to Charleston, and you're like, oh, my gosh, it's warm here. And I just went to, you know, Blacksburg a few weeks ago, and it was gray and cold, and the buildings were gray. And then you go tour the College of Charleston, which is an urban college in the middle of historic downtown Charleston. Palm trees and a city. It was beautiful. I went there to study marine biology. Just like with the connection from where I'm from.
Right.
And that was sort of how I sold it to my parents.
Nice. So I know they don't have a football team, but they have a great
marine biology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so now take us from there to how you become affiliated with the Marine Corps.
So I'm in a small peninsula of Charleston also is the home of the Citadel, which is the Military College of the South.
Oh, that's right.
And the College of Charleston is, at that time, about 75% female.
Oh.
And on the weekends, the population sort of averages out because the Citadel cadets are sort of let loose in Charleston, and so that's how I met that. He was a student at the Citadel, a cadet at the Citadel, and I was a student at the College of Charleston. And I remember, like, thinking he was cute and handsome and all those things, and I remember him telling me that he was going to be a Marine, and I remember my response clear as day, like, that's cool. Like, I had no idea.
But aren't those guys kind of dorky, though? I mean, the military school guys? I mean, that's not normal.
No, you know, like, they were like I look back now and think, like, I had never met guys like that. Like, they were so athletic and so full. Like, you have to realize, like, by the time they're finally, like, out on a Friday or a Saturday, they're just so excited to be out. Like, their perspective of, like, enjoying their free time is different than a college student who has free time all the time. So they're not really worried about, you know, any, there was no negativity. They were never complaining about any situation. They were just glad not to be at the Citadel.
Right. So you didn't see that and go, this guy's a dork. Like, who would do that to themselves? You saw that and said, be still my heart?
Yes, like, driven and, like, goal-oriented, and I was like, wow, like, you know, just, he was a few years older, so he was really focused on the Marine Corps.
Right.
So, at the Citadel, he had already sort of declared Marine Corps option, and, just filled with excitement for his future in the Marine Corps. And I thought, like, oh, so cool, like, he played pool well, his friends were all charismatic, and they all had great, you know, they were just excited, and, it was really cool. And I knew nothing about the Marine Corps. I joke now that, like, when he said that, I should have been like, what about a librarian or, like, a dentist?
Yeah, but what are your plans? So you're going to do that for, what, 3 years? And then what are you going to do? Or something like that,
I have
right?
no idea. We never even talked about that. That never, like, we never talked about any of that. It
about
was
life?
Just, like, no, like, we just wanted to be together. That was all there was about.
Wow, so this is like a total love story. We don't do this off on All Marine Radio. I'm loving this.
I mean, he joined the Marine Corps May, you know, he was commissioned May 2000 and went straight to, you know, TBS, IOC. I was still a college kid. We were mature enough that, you know, he gave me the space to still, like, be a college kid.
What does that mean? What do you mean he gave me the space? Are you going out with other guys?
You know, he wasn't like he expected me to drive to Quantico every weekend. You know, that kind of thing. We saw each other.
Because a lot of Citadel guys will do that. You know, they're kind of regimented. You will drive to get to me since
right.
I can't get to you. And so, wow. So he's kind of a little...
Yeah, no, that's what I meant by space. Like, it wasn't like a suffocating long-distance situation. Surviving PBS and IFC and...
I'm not sure. When I heard space, I'm conjuring up you running the streets of Charleston and
some kind
of Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith relationship. I don't really know a lot about that, but on the cover of People magazine that I see in the checkout line, they seem to have an odd relationship, so it wasn't like that. So that's good. That's good to know. What about how long does this happen? Because, you know, you, as Marines, we don't stay in Quantico very long. I mean, a year.
We got engaged during TBS.
Right.
And I was going to graduate the May, so it was like Thanksgiving of 2001 we got engaged, and we were going to get married August of 2002 at the Citadel, and it takes like a year to get your date, and it's a big deal, and I had 10 bridesmaids with bridesmaid dresses, and I was just loving planning a Charleston wedding, but then something happened in September of that year that sort of was my introduction to the Marine Corps.
You know what? It's kind of interesting reflecting back on that, because that event changed the trajectory of so many lives, of, you know, so many people we know, and, you know, life was kind of rolling along, and then September 11th happens, and you look back on, you don't know it at the time, but, you know, it will propel your life in such a different direction. I was a civilian, you know, and, I mean, it got me back in the Marine Corps, and honestly, I would not be doing this had it not been for that, obviously.
Right.
And so
we're so thankful.
What about, so when did you get married? So you didn't wait till August. When did you get married?
So Deb was actually on his 30-day leave from IOC when September the 11th happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Charleston, and he ended up having to report early to 3-8. That was his first ever battalion, and I remember how excited he was. And it was before there was, like, texting, and so he called me that morning before he checked into 3-8, and was like, and it's like, oh, you're going to be great. You can do this. Like, you know, the beginning of your future.
Right.
And he ended up going to Afghanistan and missing our wedding that I had planned.
Wait a minute. How did he miss the wedding? Don't you postpone it? Did you have it and he didn't?
We postponed it.
Okay.
You know, like that wedding that you spent your whole year planning, was in Afghanistan.
Did you talk to his CO and say, this doesn't really fit our plans? Could he maybe say?
No, I think Jeff was more like, please don't tell my company commander that was our wedding, because I don't want to be like the guy left behind. I think I'm married, you know.
Exactly.
How excited and passionate these guys are.
So
I remember he said that while they're in Afghanistan, he told then Captain Parkinson, sir, I was supposed to get married today, and he was like, bitch, what? Tell me. I was like, exactly.
So he goes there, and you get married when he comes back? And did you stay in school?
I graduated.
Okay, you graduated.
In May. We were supposed to get married in August. Seb is in Afghanistan by June. So he was there for my graduation, and then I think they left, like, mid-June for Afghanistan. And they were doing it a company at a time then.
Right.
Strange, and I don't really, it's all sort of hazy a little bit.
Right.
And when he got back, I had planned a new wedding for July of the following year. And he said, was like, I don't want to keep that long. And they were deploying, he came home in like October, and they were deploying again in December, 3-8, as an entire battalion. And so we decided just to get married really quickly. On the beach in Emerald Isle, just with a few friends and our parents. So
they have it. So now you're married, and your husband deploys. Welcome to the Marine Corps, right?
Well, I missed my dream wedding. You know, now I'm married, and I decide to move back home because we were only married for like 30 days before he deployed, and you know, all those seasons we didn't really know a ton of people, and
I was
writing for a newspaper at home in between the summers, and so I was excited to sort of get back to that, and that kind of sort of situation saved money. And then when he got back, it was only supposed to be a 6-month deployment, and it got extended to 9 months, almost like 10 months. And so they let us come out there as battalion commander. So I actually got to go to Japan. We met there for like 4 days. I never got over the jet lag the whole time I was there, but it was still really nice to see each other, you know, so young and that kind of stuff.
Right. So what did you think of Okinawa?
So we actually met in Tokyo because they were doing like cold weather. Is there a mountain there?
Mount Fuji.
Mm-hmm. And so the way that they gave the block leave was sort of, you know, you had these 4 or 5 days in between after that cold weather thing before you had to get back to Okinawa. So we stayed at, like, the new Sano. It's like a D&D resort. We had the best time. It was so fun. We saw the Rolling Stones there. It was really fun.
So you went to Japan. You saw the Rolling Stones. That's awesome.
Yes. So anyway, and then he finally came home, and we got to move to Camp Lejeune and, you know, be a married couple.
All right. So now, Lo, all these years later, you he's now battalion commander, and you guys have three kids. Talk to us about the experience of being a Marine wife while the nation's been at war for a long time. What are your thoughts on that?
So, sort of in a position that, you know, Zeb sits in now, I enjoy our time more than I ever thought I would because of the relationships I have with the other spouses in our unit. And inevitably, you start talking about, you know, the connection that I had with those younger years. And I think back to those years, three deployments in your first ever, like, infantry battalion as a lieutenant, and some of our lieutenant friends did four deployments. That was back when the few volunteers. I still have my, like, little team, and I was all in and tried so hard. And I don't know. I mean, you see the change in the Marine Corps. You remember that you lost a lot of friends that got out of the Marine Corps that were stellar Marines, and their families were amazing, but the tempo was killing us all. You know, you almost couldn't survive it. And so, you know, you had to say goodbye to some good friends that transitioned out. And then the ones that stayed, you just bonded together with bonds that you can't, you know, only we can relate to because those are the bonds we have. They're the godparents of all our children, you know, like our lieutenant from those 3A days. I mean, those were crazy days. We saw the key volunteer network leave, and, you know, the staff sort of reinvented with the Marine Corps, the new family readiness program to find our role to support the Marines and the families of the units that we're with. And I think that's a key part of the Marine Corps South, and you hit on that a lot, just that servant, the lives of service. And I think that's the goal of the Marine Corps South, is to serve each other, to serve their, you know, Marine, to help he or she in their career, to serve each other, to serve any, you know, any spouse or family that is in need. I think that is sort of like the key to success in a Marine Corps South world, is being able to find a way give back.
There's no shortage of opportunities given the constant, especially if you're an infantry unit man or a woman, there's no shortage of opportunities because it's always challenging. And how has that affected you, Katie? I mean, people get killed in action, and then there's always the problem of suicide. How has that affected you? I mean, you're a mom, you're a wife, and you're moving around the country like everybody else, but somehow the time stops when those things happen, and we never forget them, and they leave an indelible mark. How has that affected you?
So I've worked most of the years, like, as a teacher while Zeb has served in the Marine Corps, and one of the students in my class lost their parents, their father. And so that was my first year. I think I was about 25 years old when that happened. And just shakes you to the core, you know. We didn't have children at that time. And then back to those magical 3-8 years, Zeb had a very, very close relationship to a gunny who then passed away the following deployment. Actually, one of our clubs here is named after him. And, yeah, I mean, it just stays with you. You see the faces of those moms and those children, and you can't quite imagine how bad it is, but you know that your heart just yearns for them to heal and know how loved they are. And then the suicide part, I don't remember that during the early years. Now, there could be multiple reasons there. A, that just wasn't sharing. I didn't get as much information as a younger spouse. But let's say the last 8 years, it's become an everyday conversation. And one you have to have with your children because they're hearing, you know, some of the conversations. And then this summer we went through something as a unit, and that memorial service, I mean, it will stick with me forever to see the pain of those young Marines at the loss of their really good friend and his parents who were there, who were devastated at the loss. And yeah, you just don't get past it.
So talk to me about, you had heard about, how did you hear about post-traumatic winning, and did you hear anything about it, or did you say, well, I'll go to it? Or were you forced into going because they were worried that there weren't going to be enough people there, and this is kind of the general's baby, and the call went out, you got to go, we're not sure anybody's going to show up, you guys, so you better get your butt there.
No, in all fairness, like, usually Sunday evening or Monday evening, Zip and I do the, like, team family meeting, like, what is going on this week. And Zeb had sent me, and it was, like, in a spreadsheet form, sort of what his Monday, or what the week looked like. He had a bunch of PMEs. And then he said, there is an opportunity for you to go to a resiliency class Thursday at the Oak Club. And I said, oh, well, I already have a board meeting at the Oak Club at 6:30. I could easily get there at 5:30. You know, I think with us getting ready to deploy, as much information or tools in the tool bag that we have is best. And so he promised, knock on wood, that he would be home in time to help me with the children. Mm-hmm. So I could go. And so he rolled in Thursday, like, at 5:15. We, like, smacked hands and I ran over to the Oak Club with all intention of just spending 1 hour in the resiliency PME that was put on to get to my board meeting at 6:30, which obviously I didn't leave my chair. So that's how I ended up in that seat. I knew nothing about All Marine Radio. I knew nothing about PTSD winning, nothing. I knew nothing. I walked into that chair with no prior information.
Oh, well, welcome to the class. The so you're sitting there, and what did you think?
So right away, General Furness started. That was the first time I had met him that night, like minutes before he started. Like, we shook hands, I introduced myself, and then he started, and his story, I knew right away, like, wow, this feels like kind of real. And genuine. Not that all, you know, resiliency or, you know, PMUs aren't real and genuine, but this felt like almost intimate, like we were, you know, going to really, really get a real experience.
You know, we don't
really feel.
We don't really like words like intimacy and,
oh, okay.
and gentle, but they are all throughout post-traumatic winning. It's like the most,
right.
Even though it's from our culture, there's things like that are not Marine-like. That, or you would say, that's not Marine-like. Oh, well, it really is. And so, no, but I think you're spot on. I mean, his story.
So maybe that's it. Maybe it was that he was sharing in a way that was not Marine-like. I think that's a really good way to explain that introduction. Like, nothing that he said felt like I had ever heard a general say before. In that way. Does that make sense?
Yes. And one,
it felt like the wall was down.
I heard that comment all week. That, and you know what? And that is specifically designed like that. And because he understands what was doing. And it's kind of, I call it table flipping. Yeah. Right? It's kind of like table flipping. Like, I'm not sure what you expected, but the table's going to get flipped right now, and everything goes crazy, and everybody looks around and goes, what's going on here? What is this? And so, and he did that at every event we did. And,
wow.
Exactly. And I mean, he included pictures of his family in it. I mean, it was, and that was the introduction, for God's sake.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I was like, wow, okay, like, we're going right here. You know, we're just going to start.
All right, and so then what? So he does his thing, and so he has your attention, and then what happened next?
And then you took over from there, and you flashed. It was another sort of gridded statistical sheet of the Marine Corps, right?
Right.
And we see those statistics all the time, and it's black and white, but it's not black and white to the people who are living it, right? Because it's what you're living. The destructive behavior statistics, the sexual abuse, the DUIs, the drugs, and then, of course, the suicides. And I knew that one of those was ours. Does that make sense?
Yes.
One of our Marines was that statistic. Was in that, one of ours was in that statistic. That's way more than black and white statistics. But when you look at them, like the way you showed them, it's just so eye-opening that this is such an epidemic. Like, this is such a real problem that we have no choice but to win. We can't let this beat us. And then you made, you shared your story about the crash in 29 Palms,
yep.
Or Yuma? I can't remember. 29 Palms. And at that point, that was your, and what that gummy told you. When you shared that about, I forget how you put it, but the way I took it was, this is something that's going to stay with you forever. You're never going to get rid of this.
Right. You never get over it.
You never get over it. Which, you had me right there. Because, being married to someone in the Marine Corps and or caring about lots of different families in the Marine Corps, what that guy told you was so spot on, but it's really hard to articulate or to prepare yourself for that situation. Does that make sense? Not the exact situation that you went through, but to prepare yourself that you're never going to get over it. I thought that was a tremendous thing to share.
Let me ask you something, because for me, knowing that has always been a source of relief in that, well, if they're telling me that, then the fact that it bothers me is okay. Did you get that? Or did you think that? Or,
well, I feel like until you shared those words with me, right? And I forget how old I am, 38. I'm into school. I read a lot about some of the stuff just because of our relationship with the Marine Corps. Nobody says that. It's like this quest to make that go away. It's like, how do we fix that? No, I've never read we've never had a conversation about what you shared that day. Until now.
How crazy is that? Because when you think about it, right, it's obvious, right? That's the experience you had is laser etched in your brain. And you will you ever forget the sights and the sounds of that memorial service?
No, the mother's cry will always be with all of them.
Right.
Yeah. But until you had said that night, last Thursday, not even been a week, I had never, ever considered that some of these things that these Marines that, we as Marine spouses give our lives of service to, they're never going to get past this. Like, making that go away is not the goal. Like, it's everything you said from that moment on that night was hopeful to me. It was sad. I had mascara running down my face when I left. But everything that you all said from that moment on, I had hope that maybe it was maybe we'd been at it a little bit all wrong, that maybe we weren't going to lose this. Maybe, this was sort of like the turning point.
Tell me, what else did you find in the whole thing? Because it's pretty long, just so everybody knows. It's 2.5 to 3 hours, and then we stayed afterwards just talking.
Because
spouses have their own perspective on it, right?
And so I've been trying to reflect after you asked me, if I'd be willing to share sort of what our perspective is and our role in post-traumatic winning. Like, what is the Marine Corps spouse's role in this? And several things. Like, my brain was just, like, turning. I told you I've been thinking all weekend. Like, and several things come to me right away. And, like, the first one is sort of like when you're on the airplane and they tell you, you know, they're giving you the safety brief and they tell you, like, you need to put your oxygen mask on first before you can help the others around you, you know?
Right.
And that, I think, is sort of a shimmering force out. Like, in order to be productive and to be helpful in any of these situations, you've got to make sure that, like, we're taking care of ourselves. Because we're only as good as and able to give if we are feeling and meeting those sort of mental health and physical sort of and health needs of ourselves. And I feel like the spouses, we just give and we give. We take care of our Marine, we take care of our children, we take care of our family members, we take care of other spouses, and just like constantly reminding spouses that, like, it's, you know, some of us are suffering from trauma too. You know, it's not always just the Marine that is struggling in these situations. And so it's making sure that we are taking care of ourselves so we can continue to take care of others. And I thought in some of this, what a great job the Marine Corps spouses have done to take care of themselves. Like, part of their, you know, the 8 commandments about staying connected to the tribe. I mean, all Camp Lejeune is filled with spouse organizations to meet anybody's needs. You could make a friend that, you know, does craft, or if you wanted to take golf lessons. But then, you know, you add in the physical portion, and then you think about the Stroller Warriors. And are you familiar with that organization?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so literally, Marine Corps spouses, I think, and I could be wrong, I think it started at Camp Lejeune. And they, now there's chapters all over the country. And their name is Stroller Warriors. And it's literally Marine Corps spouses. They exercise together. They're pushing their kids in their strollers. You don't have to have a child to come. They're encouraging each other. They're working out together. They're supporting. They're there for each other. And this is exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
I mean, the Stroller Warriors is the exact tribe that these spouses need. The Marine Corps Association. No, not Marine Corps Association. There's a huge... So there's an acronym, and I'm not going to be able to get it right now. There's a huge kickball league for spouses at Camp Lejeune. I'm not kidding. Every Sunday in the spring and in the fall, I'm talking 400 spouses on a Sunday out there.
I need to come and see that then. I mean,
who doesn't? I've never seen anything like it. They're encouraging each other. They're competing with each other. They're there for each other. You know. You're connecting. You know when someone's having a bad day, whether it's, like, you know, kickball related or just struggling. These organizations are things that Marine Corps spouses have come up with on their own to do exactly what you guys were talking about. I mean, it's amazing, but the issue is, sometimes the spouses that need the most are very reluctant to come and join. And so it's like always trying to remember how to connect with everybody if you know, if at all possible.
Well, and I think the other thing that's important is that effort and that, you know, because, I mean, I think there's a fair amount of that in post-traumatic winning, whether you're talking about trying to deal with trauma and drinking. You know, that's not a very popular message on Marines. You have to stop drinking. But if you plant that seed, it's not going away. And you know, you're there. I mean, at some point, hopefully, in the right set of circumstances, they will come and play kickball. And at some point, in a different, very different, you know, kind of vein, at some point, they will look at themselves and say, "I have to stop drinking," because I know what they said was true. No doubt about that. I don't want to do it now, but I know what they said is true. So that's pretty cool. Who doesn't love to play kickball, by the way?
Well, I'm terrible at it, but I have the best time. I mean, our unit has our own kickball team, and our actual name has tribe in it, because that's what we are. You know, we are just taking care of each other and working together. But kickball is hilarious. It is fun. I mean, gosh, it is fun.
And we all played it growing up, so it's not like, I mean, who doesn't know how to play kickball? And we used to play at recess every day. I love that game. I absolutely positively love that game. No, I will. The next time if I'm there on a Sunday, I want to come watch kickball.
Yeah, you have to come. I think it's imperative because you and I both know for PTS, for post-traumatic winning to work, everybody's got to be in. And you know as well as I do, if we can touch the spouses and get an understanding of what they are going through and how they can connect, it's going to make this program that much more successful.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no. Trust me. I was talking to General Furness. And we, you know, it's kind of, we were talking, it's like, we're going to screw so many of our friends over because we're going to tell them, you got to talk about it. And kind of the, I think a lot of Marines will say, I just don't want to talk about those things with you. And
right.
As a spouse who loves that person, who's gone through door number four, and I make this phrase, in fact, General Furness said, I don't know that you should say that. I said, too bad. It's a joke. Come on, lighten up. And so I always say this. The guys and the girls that go through door number four themselves are a very, very interesting group, okay? However, the people that are attracted to those misfit toys are even more interesting. And so I said that, and everybody laughed, so the joke was understood at least. But nonetheless, it is true. They are from a similar bolt of cloth in that this person is different, right? The people that join the Marine Corps, they're different. That's what makes the Marine Corps different. The Marine Corps is different, not different as an institution, buildings, weapons, whatever, right? What's different is the people that gravitate to it, and they are different. And so the people they marry, they're a tad different too. So it's very interesting. I want to ask you, let me read the email because the email brings it up. Mac, we've heard some of the audio and video that plays in that. I'm curious, from a spouse's perspective, was Katie surprised at the example of Elizabeth Smart and also the example of your sister? Most of the time when you go to these things, they are all Marine-centric things. Katie, did those things surprise you that they were in there?
I think that is one of the most critical parts of what you're doing that is different than what we've ever been exposed to. Because living my life, all we hear is combat-related PTSD. And we're respectful of it, and we are servants of the idea to help, to do anything we can. And so it was really eye-opening to me that you do include situations that are obviously, no questions asked, traumatic, and relate them to what we are going through. Because just like what you're saying, the people, A, that went through door number four, and then B, the people who married door number four Marines, we have no idea what trauma they're bringing through the door and or what trauma happens along this journey. And their trauma is equivalent and plays not second fiddle to any of the combat-related PTSD that we hear so much about. I mean, trauma is trauma. It's real. You helped us or helped me understand that a little bit better that night.
No, and again, I always make the comment, because of what happened to my sister, which certainly dwarfs anything I've ever experienced.
I can't imagine. That's the worst.
I spent close to 3 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. The worst thing I've ever seen in my life happened in my hometown to my sister.
Yeah.
And the toughest person I know has never put on a uniform. It's my sister, and so I've always had bifocals. And when I hear some of these, you know, seem difficult things, one of the things that the voice in my head says to me that I don't govern is, it's pretty rough, but not even close to what Peggy went through. And so, and again, not to be dismissive or judgmental in any way, but just, and that's what this idea is, that, hey, look, you know, we're not special. And I think a lot of times we like to think we are. And it gives rise to that, I don't really want to talk about it because this is combat, and I don't share that with my wife, and blah, blah, blah.
Right, and blah, blah, blah.
Right, and yeah, exactly. And that's, in my opinion, that's bullshit. Because the only way, I mean, and so I said, look, if I was a spouse, and I was the shock absorber for all this crap, and then I got told, yeah, I don't want to talk about it. That would not sit well with me. I say, look,
this,
you know, right? I would say, look, I'll put my hand up when I can't take anymore, or you can put your hand up when you don't want to share anymore, okay? But we have to go there as a couple, right? It's only going to bring us closer, and that's when I said, I am screwing so many of my friends over, and General Furness said, you know, when we left on Tuesday night, we got in the car, and his wife's name's Linda, right? Linda looked at me and said, we got to talk. Anyway, I knew this was going to happen. Well, go ahead.
We hear the man in the arena a lot in the Marine Corps. Right. You know, it's a, you know, sort of quote and a, you know, a storyline that people bring up at all different occasions, right? And so as the spouse, you're sitting there and you're, you know, you're listening to it again and talking about the man who, you know, is in the arena, but as the spouse, I'm sitting there thinking, the only reason he's able to go to the arena is because there's a spouse behind he or she caring for the children, keeping everything going at the home front, and that if he fails, who's there to gather them, heal them, help them to return to the arena? It's the Marine Corps spouse. Like, we're the second part to that sort of quote that gets used so much. And every time we hear it, Deb just smiles at me because he knows I'm going to be like, yeah, I know how you feel about the man in the arena.
There's another piece that should be added to that quote, that there's a little bit more to being in the arena than just being in the arena.
Right. So I think that's, you know, sort of how, and I want you to, I think you are planning a spring return to Camp Lejeune, and I promise I'll do everything I can to get that room filled chair to chair with spouses, because we need this. We need your connection to our part of the.
I will send you the dates, but it's, I want to say, the week of April 12th, if I'm not mistaken. I will send you the dates, but it's in conjunction with the Marine Corps South Expo, which is going to be at Lejeune. So, in fact, you could help me. I'm speaking at Camp Pendleton February 7th and 8th, doing a version of it. Josh won't be there, and I'm not sure Mike's going to come out. But
will the rabbi story be shared?
The rabbi, is that awesome or what?
That's a critical piece for spouses. That's your spouse piece right there, because the relationship in a marriage, when someone needs to retreat and grow, right?
Yes.
Is knowing how to relate and how to help in that situation, because it connected with me right away to two things, right?
Wait. So hold on. So. You're the rock in the story. The lobster goes underneath the rock for protection and grows.
Right, but the lobster has a partner, right? The lobster isn't alone on this journey.
Oh, okay. All right.
Right?
Well, hold on.
When the lobster leaves,
how about this?
Family of lobsters to grow and.
Oh.
And it could be the spouse. This is with my connection. As a spouse, every time my husband deploys, you know this, that 45 days beforehand, what happens? You start to, you know, you know, you put up that wall, you need your space, you retreat to protect yourself emotionally. It's not that you don't love each other, it's that that's your retreat. And through the deployment, you know, and then when you come home...
Hey, Katie, can I tell you something? We don't talk about we don't talk about that. People are absolutely floored when, you know, they'll ask you, like, well, what's the scariest thing that, what's the scariest part of the whole thing? And my answer, with not even hesitating a nanosecond, it's saying goodbye to your wife and kids, wondering if you'll ever see them again. And after, you know, and knowing that they have the same thought in their head and everybody's faking it. I said, that is literally terrifying. And the hours and the minutes leading up to that are just, God, it's like, make this go away. I mean, most of us run out of the house, honestly. I mean, I know my friends are, you know, we've done this a lot. And the last time we went to Afghanistan, one of my friends who's, you know, incredible guy, calls me and says, hey, you need to come get me now. I can't do this anymore. My kids are crying. You know, my wife's trying to make it good, and it's just, I gotta get out of here. And it's just, it's a horrible, and the buildup for that, as Katie says, is weeks, knowing that it's coming. And it's terrible. Okay, hold on. I want to play the lobster audio here, okay?
Okay, great.
And then I want you to expand your comments on why this is so important.
Oh, we have to look at stress.
Oh, hold on.
There's something I want to tell you about the stress and how we have to look at stress. Okay? And I think it's an important thing because many people have told me from my lectures it's the one thing they remember. Okay? I was sitting in a dentist's office and looked at an article that said, how do lobsters grow? Well, I don't care how lobsters grow. But I was interested in it. And it points out that a lobster is a soft, mushy animal that lives inside of a rigid shell. That rigid shell does not expand. Well, how can the lobster grow? Well, as the lobster grows, that shell becomes very confining. Right? And the lobster feels itself under pressure and uncomfortable. It goes under a rock formation to protect itself from predatory fish, casts off the shell, and produces a new one. Well, eventually, that shell becomes very uncomfortable as it grows, right? Back under the rocks. And the lobster repeats this numerous times. The stimulus for the lobster to be able to grow is that it feels uncomfortable. Right? Now, if lobsters had doctors, they would never grow. Because as soon as the lobster feels uncomfortable, goes to the doctor, gets a Valium, gets a Percocet, feels fine. Never gets off its shell. So I think that we have to realize is that we have to realize that times of stress are also times that are signals for growth. And if we use adversity properly, we can grow through adversity.
All right. Why did that impact you?
So, you know, I'm sort of visualizing, like, the lobster and that need to, you know, some of that had... What I took quickly was the retreat and then grow. And having the space to go under the rock, to retreat, to grow. And so understanding that either self, as they are feeling stress, and so for me as a Marine Corps spouse, it's a deployment and a move, right?
Right.
I move my whole family. I say goodbye to everything that I know. I move somewhere else. I have no friends most of the time. You know, you may know one or two acquaintances at your next place. And that's a retreat and grow for me. And so in our marriage, we understand these times of sort of stress for each other and having the confidence in each other to allow that time for retreat and grow. And I feel like as a spouse, I find myself, even with the, you know, small amount of years we have been with war, touching up, like, are you okay? Like, why aren't you talking to me? Or, you know, feeling like he's distant and that hurts my feelings. And somehow as spouses, we have to learn, you know, how to take that retreat and grow time for us and that it's okay. And how to sort of aid our Marines in the retreat and grow, and to give them the space and peace, and to support them and for them to support us during those high stress times that retreat and grow is necessary to be successful as we deal with the uncomfort, you know, the uncomfortable situation that is sort of causing the retreat and grow. That was right away what I thought about. Like, as that lobster finds that rock, he's leaving, like, the lobster and the lobsters to retreat and grow. And it's, how do we give the Marines and or the spouses that opportunity to get under the rock for a minute? To deal with the discomfort. How do we aid in that? Where is the spouse's part as we're shedding the shell? Or with the Marine's part when the spouse is, you know, it's educating, I think, the sort of spouses and the Marines on how to support each other through this so that you grow together instead of growing apart in that growth. Does that make sense?
Wait, say that again?
Just so that the spouse and the Marines, as the growth occurs, they can grow together instead of growing apart.
You know what, and I don't know that there's any other way, because if you don't grow together, then you grow apart, and that is I think, and I'm not going to tell you who told me this, but somebody was telling me about her husband who had been to this thing, and she said, he's changed this week. I said, what? She said, yeah, he's changed this week. I said, uh-oh. She said, no, it's great. It's wonderful. It's great. I'm like, oh, it's always scary when somebody says something like that. But, I mean, I think that's the truth, though. I mean, if you're not growing together, and I until I started doing this, you know, I don't know that I ever put myself in a spouse's position and thought, what would that feel like? You know, what would that feel like if somebody told me that? Like, I put up with all the anger, I put up with, you know, all of a sudden I look over and he's got tears in his eyes, and I know there's something going on in there, but I can't go there with you. I think that would be really, really, really difficult. I want to go there with you. You know, can you take me part of the way there with you, please? But everybody I talked to said, this is so good. How about, and the rabbi, he looks like he's out of the central casting, right?
I know, I love it. I mean, that's a connection for spouses, because we want, I mean, when I say we, I mean collectively,
right.
You're not still in it if you don't want to grow together. Right. You know, for the most part, we all want to grow together, but we also, we're looking, you know, I went to that EME for more tools in the toolbox, like, help us, you know, or, you know, we're all just sort of in this journey with the attitude that we can make it work, but just wanting to try and how to help each other and to grow together. As spouses and or, you know, marriages, and I mean, I think that's the connection to the spouse, is helping to educate them on what that looks like.
My guest today is Katie Beasley. She's from rural East Coast Virginia, as opposed to West Coast Virginia. And she joins us from Camp Lejeune this morning, and she attended post-traumatic winning. And we're talking about her thoughts. But I want to read you, if you don't mind there, Catherine, I'm gonna read your email, right? So I'm on a flight from Charlotte to Phoenix, okay? And I actually at one point put my glass on because I was reading all these different emails that I'd glanced at, and now I'm reading them. So here's, do you have it? Will you read it?
I don't have it.
Okay.
No, I don't have it.
I'll read it then. Good morning. I was so fortunate to join you last night for the spouse PME held at the Camp Lejeune O Club. Never before have I left a PME with mascara running down my face and proclaiming the event was life-changing. My husband, Zeb, is the CEO of 3-6. We spent the entire evening talking about the program and the mission of All Marine Radio. We have all lost Marine Corps friends to suicide, and it leaves you empty and confused and questioning. We did our best. Did we do our best to keep in touch and stay connected? This summer, our unit experienced the greatest loss of one of our own. The pain and the tears from his friends and family will be with us forever. Thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for your work. Seb and I are in the middle of this elite journey, and your time at Lejeune this week has planted the seed of hope in all of us. With 1, 2, 3 exclamation marks. Sincerely, Katie Beasley, Marine Corps spouse. Tell me about writing that. And including, you know, as Katie and I were exchanging emails, for me, the last week and plus, I mean, it is, this whole class is rooted in not pleasant events in my life. And I've always been committed to, I'm going to tell these stories. And I had a conversation with somebody in my family who told me at my nephew's funerals, you haven't cried enough. I said, I'm done crying. I said, for the rest of my life, I will tell their story so that it makes a difference and it saves other people. We are not going to take this and not change other people's lives, and their lives are going to stand for something. And so, I mean, this stuff is rooted in the pain of life that we all experience. And so to read that for me, I think that's when I fired on my sunglasses inside the airplane, right? And I have my hand like next to my eye on the inboard side of the aircraft, so nobody would see like me wiping tears out of my eyes all the time. So talk to me about, you don't have to tell me about mascara because I don't really understand it.
Yeah.
But,
well, I came home and that, you know, I get to the board meeting that I'm like super late to, and right. I think people think I've been in a car crash because I'm like, oh my gosh, you will not believe what I just experienced. I give my spiel and I go straight home to get Zeb so that we can talk. And, you know, no TV that night, not that we ever have much time, but I mean, it was like literally what you're saying, like one-on-one conversation, I think until like 11:30. And then that morning I asked Zeb if he thought it would be okay for me to write you a thank you note. I also wrote the professors a thank you note. And he was like, absolutely. He said he thought that you guys would appreciate feedback. And so I said, oh, okay. So I fired off that email. And then I also posted, I figured out, I'm not very good with technology, but I got on your website, I found your email address, and I also figured out a way, you had already done a little bit of conversation on your website about what you were doing here at Camp Lejeune. And I posted that on the Marine Corps Spouse's Facebook page. It was like, just wanting to make sure you all are aware of this work, the literature, and, you know, just to make you all aware. And I also, you know, had conversations with friends of ours whose husbands are either retired or not in the Marine Corps anymore that I thought would really benefit from being in sort of contact with All Marine Radio. And I told every person that would listen, like at the bus stop or at the soccer game this weekend, I mean, everybody, I mean, people are going to sort of get sick. They're going to see me and be like, oh gosh, here we go, another plug for All Marine Radio. But that as a Marine Corps staff, sometimes you try to find the things you can control, and one thing that we do a good job with is sharing information. Does that make sense? And you're only as good at the information of which you have, and so I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew about your work and how meaningful it was.
So explain to me the hope part of it. Why did the presentation give you hope, Katie? Because to me, when I hear you talk, to me, the hope that the presentation created is the foundation for the two words life changing. But I was talking to, I might have been talking about General Furness. So, and he and I, again, everybody knows, he and I are great friends. We've served together 4 times, 3 of them in combat.
Right.
And we're boys. I'm like his spouse away from his spouse. So, we were talking about your email, and I said, "What? When you read those words, life changing. I mean, people don't write that kind of stuff, right? I mean, when was the last time you wrote you know, those words. And it's like you don't, people don't do it. And it kept happening over and over again. And so, right. So talk to me about the hope.
So you can't escape suicide right now in the Marine Corps. I was getting nervous about having this phone call with you. I've never done anything like this before. And I sent you a screenshot of what the text message is that I got that day. You can't escape it. You know, a neighbor not residing on base at Camp Lejeune, but a neighbor of a friend of mine that lived in Jacksonville committed suicide at the beginning of January. And I was just getting this information and, you know, just letting that friend know that Deb and I were here for them. And then it's like you've got the conversation, the feeling that there is hope. We might not ever make suicide go away in the Marine Corps, but after seeing the statistics, there's got to be a solution that makes us feel like we have the capability to win. And up until that night, I feel like that epidemic felt bigger than any solution that we've ever heard or talked about. Like, there's no new ideas about suicide. It's just that more is happening. No one's throwing out the kind of stuff that you guys are throwing out at All Marine Radio. Like, nobody's talking about any of the things you said. And so you guys kept saying, like, where's your seed planting? And that's what I thought. Like, oh, my gosh. You touch, I don't know, I've been telling people 10,000 Marines that week.
Right.
If 10,000 Marines tell one other Marine, or, like, some of the other feedback you got, I mean, that's what felt before I even knew that feedback was going to come to you, was going to happen. Like, that was sort of why I felt that presentation was so life-changing, is because we sit through these CMEs or we listen or we read about trauma and suicide, and it's like there's no way to apply any type of change. It's just like this is what we're dealing with, but, like, give us the tools. You gave us the tools, and I think that it's going to be very successful.
Well, I'm hoping. In fact, you can help me. If you know women at Camp Pendleton, I would love
to. Yes, I do. I know, like, a regimental CO south, and I know several battalions. You know, I'm only infantry rooted, but I can get you tons of Camp Pendleton contacts.
So I'll shoot you the times, and again, it's not the class that you saw, but it'll be a short version. And then what I'd like them to do is come down and check it out, and then put the word out. And I would love to go down and do it for them for the spouses at Camp Pendleton, because I do believe, and I've always understood the power of the spoken word, and when you hear it, for instance, when you hear Elizabeth Smart say, that night, Michael David, whatever, raped me again, like he had done every night for 9 months. But it would be the last time. When you hear the power of her voice, and then at the end of that she says, I'm not cracked, I'm not shattered, I am Elizabeth Smart. You hear that, and so having done this for almost 3 years now, and I've always been kind of attuned to it because it's been a part of my life. And so you accumulate all this stuff and you understand the power and then the question. And then I kind of have a little like laboratory here, and I get responses from people that listen, and they're incredible responses. And one of the Marines whose lives was changed by listening to this got married last Saturday.
Aww.
When he danced with his mother, they danced to Welcome to Our House, right? The Florida song that I use. And she sent me a text message, and she said, you're going to laugh when you hear this, but that song means so much to our family because it means him finding, you know, how to deal with his demons and hope for all of us. And you've changed all of our lives, and we can never say thank you enough. So we danced to that song. And I got that like Saturday evening or something like that after I got home.
Gosh, your heart must have been like five sizes too big or whatever, like well, the French does.
And that's hopefully that's the power of this message is the empowerment that you give them, right? You tell them this is what's true, and then you tell them this is how it applies to you, and then the inside Jew comes in and says, this is how you deal with it. These are the things that you can do, right, to evaluate yourself, to course correct. These are how you develop wellness practices so you can kind of off-ramp that I call it my black blood when it gets going, and you can live the life that you want. And so, to me, it's the perfect circle.
I connected with that black blood. The whole thing, you just connect with it all. I mean,
your black blood. Oh, trust me. That stuff gets percolating. Oh, my God. Watch out. But the part I love the most is probably the shortest part of the whole presentation, which is right at the end, when you say, okay, let me tell you that it gets even better now. You know more than 95%, 99% probably of the population about living with trauma. You do, because there's not another class like that. If you take this stuff, and as you've sat through here, I know there's pictures that have popped into your head of people that you think of when you've heard these things, to include yourself. Go touch their lives with these truthful things. Go touch their lives with these things we tell you to do, and show them, and you will change their life forever. And so, to me, that is the most powerful part, because if my life, if I'm touching other people's lives, and my heart's growing, and I see them doing it, even when my life gets tough, I don't need to look at suicide anymore. Because I know that I can do this. Elizabeth Smart did it. My sister did it. You know, other people are doing it. I know I can do this. I don't know life sucks. And to me, that's the empowering part and the giving of others, which to me lines up perfectly with the kind of people that are in our tribe, is it's the shortest part, but it's extremely powerful. And my question was, would people get it? And the answer to that is, not only did they get it, regardless of their age, I think people find that intoxicating, because they know people whose life that they can touch and help.
Well, I mean, that's the sort of part of my email that I said, like, the seeds of hope. You guys said several times, like, we're planting seeds. And so we're seed planting, and I connected with that. And that's exactly it. Like, just the planting of a seed, that it doesn't have to be that large of a statistic. Like, that is not the only option of getting out of a really bad situation. Look at all these other ideas and suggestions, and you're in control of your own journey as well as taking on your body with you. Like, I connected with that whole idea, like, I guess some Marines get injured, you care for yourself first, and then you grab your buddy. I mean, like, that's the money for it. That, I think, would pick it out of
us,
is
right,
to care for your buddy.
Well, you know, and one of the things I love about the whole collaborative event of this, and it's so cool, in my opinion, is, you know, you like, I'll do my piece, and I'll listen to Mike do his, and they change the way I look at my own stuff, and I really like that. And I mean, being able to sit with General Furness for the whole week and talk to him about it, and see, he started out not talking about his family, but after we did the first one, I think, or the first two, he stands up, and he and I are great friends, and he starts telling the story about his daughter, and I was sitting there thinking, holy shit, he's never spoken about this in public. And it makes you so proud, right? Here's your friend who's watched it, who's paid attention, and now he's gonna set the example of how to do it in front of, you know, his whole division. And then the next day he brought in pictures. He said, "Hey, would you make a slide out of this?" Because he wanted to make it more powerful. Yeah, he wanted to make it more powerful. And so it's just, honestly, this extremely cool thing, meeting people like you who've been touched by it, and they're stirred by the message of hope, that it doesn't have to be the way we've thought about it, right? But we've got to be better in terms of articulating it and showing them that life is like this. And we had a, this is funny, and so I want to say it was Daryl Furness, myself, and Josh. And Josh was trying to make, he was making a point, and he said, okay, so here's life, and he drew this flat line. And he was going to make this other part. I said, no, that's not life, though. When you draw the straight line, you mislead them. And he looked at me, and he's like, what? And I said, no, you like you draw the line, and you said, and then trauma enters your life, and then it goes down. Life is wavy. It's not the flat line. And so when you draw the flat line, that's not life. And that's what we're trying to convince them, that the natural meter of life includes adversity and trauma. You're not, it's like, you're not extraordinary because trauma enters your life. We're all in there. And I love the part, it was really interesting, you know, when you have, you know, somewhere between 900 to 1,100 Marines in a room, when you start saying, if I ask, and we're talking about trauma, and I said, if I asked everybody to put their hand up that's been to combat, blah, 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 you know, you'd see a smattering of hands go up. I said, but let me tick down another list that's equally as traumatic, maybe more traumatic in some cases. If you were beaten as a child repeatedly for no reason, and I don't mean spanked, I mean beaten, right? If you've been sexually assaulted, if you've been violently assaulted, if you've watched a loved one die of cancer, a prolonged illness, and ultimately die of that, you know, and then I just go down the list. I said, I venture to say that every hand in this room is going up. And it's not,
yeah.
Right? And it's no different. And it's really cool the way that young people who walked in thinking, oh, my God, just let this thing go fast. This is going to be another horrible class on being resilient. all of a sudden, later that night, they're walking up to you in a restaurant, right? Walking up to old people in a restaurant going, gentlemen, I just came by to thank you for the class today. What?
You guys are the new rock stars of 2nd Marine Division.
Well, I mean, it's certainly, I don't know if I sent you it, but General Furness said, normally I go to the gym to work out and nobody looks at me or talks to me, right?
And I thought that was
good. Today, I couldn't get through my workout because Marines coming up to me saying, thank you, that was awesome. That, and we were like laughing. That doesn't happen. That never happened.
Yeah. Well, Zeb's observation when his Marines had the opportunity to have time with you all is that I guess you guys gave them like a bathroom break or something. But
yes.
Like, nobody moved out of their chairs. Like, it wasn't because they didn't want to lose their seat. It was because they just were processing, you know, like taking it all in.
Which tends not to happen at these events. Katie,
well, that's what Zeb was saying. Like, usually
they're running out. They're running out of the doors, trying to see if they can sneak away. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you about your experience, about how it impacts spouses, that you want people to know?
I mean, I think it's, you know, we touched on it a little bit, but it's the commitment to grow together. And that's a connection with spouses. Like, we are connected through the bond of the commitment to grow together as a group of people that love the organization as the Marine Corps and growing together as spouses and also growing together with your Marine. And it's tapping into the energy that comes with us because we have energy. I mean, but it's like what you're saying. It's not flatline energy. It's not like we always have energy. But when we have energy to give, helping us figure out what our part is in this program. Because I think that's a critical part to winning this epidemic.
I don't know that I need to think about that for very long. And I think, right, the first thing is your responsibility is our responsibility, and it is you got to talk. And that was the power of General Furness. What he did every day was we say, look, and I was laying in bed. I can't sleep, by the way. I fall asleep on the couch at night at maybe 9:30, and I'll wake up at 1 o'clock, and I can't, because I have all this stuff in my head and this opportunity that has been 3 years in the making and much longer than that in coming, is getting closer, and I have these things in my head, and I'm waking up. I'm waking up, and I'm writing them down. And then because I don't have to go to, I can't get back to sleep, I'm then typing them. And it's wonderful. But, you know, the point is, the reason you have to share, especially those of us that are older, is that is the invitation for younger people to share. And right. I don't care if you're a Marine Corps spouse. I don't care if you're married and dealing with your spouse. This and I was thinking, laying in bed, thinking of what would, like, the gang sign be for post-traumatic winning? It would be a fist raised in the air, all right? And right. Because one of the things I say is, look, we are faking mental health because we don't talk about it. When you're isolated, you are at the weakest you will ever be. Our strength, just like when we go fight, is in the combined nature of what we do. And in order to do that, you have to talk about it. So, you know, if you look at your hand and you extend your fingers and you spread them all out and you say, that's the weakest my hand is. And then you ball that fist up and you say, but this is us together. And together we can do anything. And all you have to do is read our history. Whether it's start FedEx, start Team Rubicon, or go up Mount Suribachi, we can do anything. Because that's what's in the human nature of the people that go through door number four and the people that marry. Hell, right. I mean, it's even in the nature of our kids. Because we give it to them, and we make sure they have it. And so I can't sleep at night. So I'm thinking about things like that. And just the visual of this hand is at its weakest point right here with my finger extended. But when we're like this, and the only way you can get like this is to share your story and to talk.
But that's like the opposite of anything we've ever done as a community about mental health. I mean, you think about counseling, and it's like one-on-one. You're like the most alone you ever are in that room as a counselor. You're like isolated.
The thought of
doing it together, makes it feel like it's an obtainable quest, because that's all you know is the other. Marines aren't isolated very often. I mean, they barely can even go to the bathroom. I don't even know if you do get to go to the bathroom alone.
We don't. We go together.
You see my point? But yet, when you're seeking help, you're alone. Like, it sounds like what you're saying. It goes against, like, the fundamental makeup of a United States Marine is to tackle this alone. Because they've never even been able to get to the bathroom alone.
We don't really like to disclose that, but you're absolutely right. And then the other part is that when you think about it, and people have come up to me and said, you know what, I've been laying here, you know, thinking about this, and you lay it out, and it's so logical. If you know you're never going to get over it, right, then you have to deal with it. If you know that when you're isolated that you're at your weakest, then you have to share it. And whenever we share it, right, good things always seem to happen. So why are we so reluctant to share it? And I say, because, you know, you hear these stories like, yeah, he fought in World War II. He came home. He never spoke about it. Well, that was pretty healthy. Oh, and when he on his way home from work, he stopped at the Legion and got drunk every night. We left that part out of it. Yeah, so he was self-medicating. And so, to me, you know, it's that intimacy that gets created by a sharing. And the other piece is, every one of us is dealing with it. We're all dealing with the traumatic events in our lives, whether they're from our childhood, whether they're from that we experience professionally in combat, whether they're from life of dealing, you know, and General Finesse talked about dealing with, you know, their daughter. And that's a fact, too. So it's like, to me, it kind of pisses me off because this, I don't think I'm anything special, but connecting this in, to me, a kind of no-shit way is evidently special. And it's wonderful, but I don't think when I look at it, it's like, well, that's kind of true, and that's kind of true. And if those things are true, shouldn't we be doing this? Well, hello. So, anyway, I just, it strikes me that it's new because it seems obvious when you really sit down and understand the truth and like, okay, how do we get our hands around this?
Well, and the other part was, you know, just the fact that, like, division, like, Second Marine Division, like, that's like a huge beast, right? Second Marine Division thinks that this important to help this situation, that also makes it hopeful. Does that make sense? Like, I took that away, too, with the situation. Like, this isn't just, like, our battalion dealing with the thing, the destructive behavior and suicide. This was like, oh, my gosh, the Marine Corps and Division has decided that we've got to get a handle on this, and and this All Marines Radio and these ideas of post-traumatic winning look like something that might work. You left hopeful, like, oh my gosh, like, this is real. Like, we're going to beat this beast, and we're going to beat it together. That, you know, that was the takeaway that night. That's what felt so, like, easy. Like, that it felt like the odds of winning were back in our court.
How cool is it when the spouses even say winning? Right? It's a cultural thing, and I love it because it comes out of our culture, and it's based in the truth, right? There isn't anything that we say in that thing that you would look at and say, well, yeah, I didn't really agree with that. You know, one thing that didn't happen through the course of the whole week, yeah, I think, like, your third commandment's bullshit. Nobody.
No, I thought you're spot on, buddy. Yeah, all of it. You're right. I mean, I don't think anybody had any. I can't imagine anyone.
No, they don't.
Feel
I mean,
that way.
And you know how snarky people are, especially with social media.
Oh yeah, there's always someone.
Right. Mm-hmm. In fact, I got a text message from a Marine during the show, and I didn't see it till later. But he's like, before it started, because I looked at the time, dude, you're gonna punish us, aren't you? Please don't forget what it's like to sit through these lame-ass classes or something like that. And then, like about an hour later, he sends another one. Your message is pretty solid. I like it. And then he sent me another. He sends me a video after that, and the video is for how to convert Jewish people to Christianity. Could you give this to the inside Jew? I'm like, all right. But that's as close as it came to somebody being a jackass. And I love that because none of this is, it's all the truth that I've heard on this program for close to 3 years. And it feels really good to share those truths that have been given to me by other Marines and other Marine spouses. And so it's very cool. All right, so what's next? So what's next is we're going to come back and we're going to get hundreds of spouses to show up. And then,
oh, yeah.
And then they're going to go.
You're going to come to kickball.
I'm going to come to kickball. Is it co-ed kickball or just girl kickball?
No, you've never seen. It's the Marine Corps spouses. Uh-oh. This is the spouses making their own tribe, taking care of each other. You're going to walk away and know that this is exactly what you're talking about. This is what you're... I will connect you with some spouses in California.
Okay.
And I can send you their emails and stuff. And then
What I'd rather do? Will you reach out to them first and say, I'm going to put you in touch with somebody, but you have to go to this. Okay, you know me. I would.
Oh, yeah. No,
I need you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people will do the same thing that everybody did when they heard it at Camp Lejeune, which was, really? You know, do I have to? You know, but when they hear your passion, your intensity about it, they'll get off the phone saying, oh, my God, right? I know she doesn't drink, but, wow, that was amazing. So that's what I need. So anyway, well, Katie, first of all, I hope this is the start of you have some skills, and hopefully that we can do some stuff together. And
absolutely.
And first of all, thank you for the incredible email that for me. I know for me and Mike and Josh, it was just incredibly inspiring and humbling to read that, and so wonderful to know that the message, you know. Hit its mark, and that you walked out of there, you know, feeling positive and full of hope that we can do this and we can win. And so thank you very much for that. And then also thank you very much this morning for coming on.
Oh, no problem. I mean, you know, I mean, it's anything that we can do to help you and encourage you all to keep this work going. We're here. So.
All right. Thank you very much. We will do this again sometime if you don't mind. If I have, sometimes I'll put together, you know, two people to come on with me and we'll talk about an issue. I hope you don't mind if I bother you in the future.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Happy to help.
Okay. All right. Katie, have a great day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
There you have it.
Bye.
That is Katie Beasley from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. How cool is that? How cool is that? Yeah, no, you just, throughout the course of the week, we just kept having that experience right there. And you talk about being excited, and I mean, and one of the funny things was, we were doing that thing, it's close to 3 hours, and then by the time you get done talking to everybody, it's probably 3.5 hours. So we were doing that 3 times a day from Tuesday to Thursday, and then did it twice a day the other days, right? So you talk about 7, 10.5 hours of just doing the program itself, and then we'd get together at the end of the night and we'd talk about it. But it was so inspiring that people, meeting people like Katie, came away so fired up about it, and the message had hit home. And that we were doing what we really, really wanted to do, what we are really passionate about, and that is touching the lives of people and telling them that post-traumatic winning is a real concept, that they can do it, that it gives hope, because it gives tools to deal with this stuff that a lot of people get overwhelmed by. So, very exciting. All right, we're going to take a break. More of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the ReadBoard page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans listed up, this is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Charles. Hit the road, Jack. 9:38. My thanks once again to Katie Beasley for joining us this morning. Very cool, the different people that we've met doing this. And their response. So, I don't know if he knows that I'm on the air. Do you know that I'm on the air?
Yeah, you stop.
Well, okay. Today's your day off. What's going on? What are you doing?
Oh, just running around, doing some errands.
What's that?
Well, no, I got into a real good discussion with a police officer, one of the sergeants there, talking about, you know, about what we were doing and stuff, and then kind of interested. And, you know, he thinks like you and I, but he was, but it was just really interesting to see him do the, oh, man, that explains, and then he starts talking about his childhood. He's like, well, shit, that's why, you know, my mother died at a really young age, and my father died faithful, and so those compelling things that I've lived with have caused me to do this, this, and, you know, so it was really cool. And he's like, when are you guys doing this here?
Set it up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, wasn't it during the week that, did you show me this statistic or somebody else, that only 10% of police departments?
Yeah. That's 10%. so we were talking about police, you know, again, this year or last year, more officers died by suicide than the line of duty. So what a message that sends too, because when you understand police are tribal just like Marine Corps, and actually there are more closed tribes than the Marines, because they're a set of you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. You can go to a Marine unit, and once they know you're a Marine, you're in. Not so much with cops. Cops are a bunch of series of sub-tribes that are all relatively the same, but they're not the same. You're not automatically like, you're a brother. Yeah, you're like, hey, brother. Yeah, but, hey, don't touch anything. You know, whereas the Marine, shit, man, they'd be like, hey, you need a place to sleep? You need a car tomorrow? You know? They're a series of sub-tribes. So the whole worry about is, for them is, if you're going to die, you better die in the line of duty, because that gets your name and your picture on the wall. If you die by suicide, man, you are swept under the rug, and we just don't talk about those fucking poor souls. And so, you know, it's such a huge, and like you said, you know, you're going to start seeing, because they're starting to talk about it a little bit more, but they're not talking about what we talk about. They're not talking about winning it, though. They're just kind of like the coexisting phase of you know, the psychologist of, oh, well, we're just going to have to deal with it, you know?
How cool is it when Katie Beasley's talking about winning, right? Our spouses are talking about winning, okay?
Yeah. And then you can understand you can win, and you can lead a better, more fulfilled life. You think your life's good now? Holy shit. Yeah.
No, and that's what, I mean, you know, what she just said, you know, she was on the air for the last, hour and a half, and she talked about, you know, she said, I left there, and I was so hopeful, because all this stuff resonated. You know, all of it, the truth, and then the hope, and how to do it, and that we can do this. There is a way. We can do this. And I, you know, again, you're not, it's not a black cave anymore. Somebody just turned the lights off. Turned the lights on and said, hey, this is where we're going. Let's go. And we're going.
And I hate Happy Downer, but the word we is a very loose word. And she's right, though. We can, when we use the word we're including everybody. We can do this. The problem comes out to you is you, as well as I mean, we both know, that's not always a true statement. It's not a we. It's a selective we. Because we're going to still run into the problems of, you know, mental health is going to be upset because this is not in line with what they want. You know, shit, they don't want people to win. Some people to get better.
Yeah, but you know, again, just like combat first aid, you know, the first step is self aid, the next step is buddy aid, and then if you need more, then you go. But what we're proposing is, look, if you do first aid and buddy aid, and you'll listen, and you'll educate yourself a little bit, unless you're part of the 1% that needs further psychiatric care, you can do this. This is fully within your capability. You can do this. And if you need to go get more care, then go get it. And we, you know, right? We even talk about that. How to do it. Here's how to do it. Here's how it makes sense.
And it's also having the right tools, Max. So we talk about first aid. You can be the best lifesaver, but if you don't have a fucking, your brain doesn't have all the possible tourniquets, the bandages, or pressure dressing, you're not going to do very good job. So
you're kind of coming in garbled, like the microphone's covered or something.
Okay. How about now?
No, worse.
How about right now? I'm back outside.
Yeah, better.
So you need, just like a good first aid lifesaver, you need that kit.
Right.
You need the pressure dressings. You need the tourniquets. You need, you know, the splints. You need all of that, those things, so when you're dealt with that, hey, this is the injury we have, boom, I got the tools. And then you know how to use them correctly.
Right.
You know, that's the big key. is we need to provide the tool bag. That they need that first aid kit. They need to be stocked. And they need to stay stocked.
Yeah, it needs to be an IFAC. It doesn't need to be the plastic green little box that you put your cigarettes in.
Uh-huh. With the iodine tablets and the two band-aids and the cravat.
Right. That's not what. That's what. But I said, you know what, Mike?
Make it a cravat and make it an eye bandit. You can make it a sling. You can make it, just give me the goddamn sling or the fucking tourniquet. Don't give me one thing and tell me, hey, you can tie it into these two knots and make it everything. No, it doesn't work that way.
What's funny, that's kind of a powerful optical. Hey, here's what we have now. And the little green first aid kit. This is what we have now, right? Here's what we're going to give you by the time you leave today. You're going to have an IFAC, for God's sake.
Yeah,
that's what we're going to do today. That's what this is about. We're going to build the IFAC today. And
right.
And so, but I mean, to hear her talk about the hope that she felt, I mean, literally makes your heart grow, makes your heart happy, all that stuff, because it's like she gets it. She gets it.
Yeah, that was a great, powerful, to hear Katie talk like that. That was great.
No, she's obviously, and again, you know what? I mean, as much as, we try to say, well, I want to protect them from it. I don't want to take them there. They go through it like everybody. I mean, she said, look, that memorial service for that Marine who took his own life, I'll never forget that. His family and how devastated his friends were. And the response to it is, of course you'll never forget that. It'll be with you forever. And so there's a lot of good stuff in the IFAC, in the mental health IFAC. But it's just so wonderful that, she gets it, right? She gets it. She's excited about it. And she wants to do more of it. Very, very cool.
I think that's great.
But again, but police departments, hello? Look.
Yeah. They're the worst right now. They really need a lot of help. I mean, like you said, less than 10% of all departments in the United States have some kind of program instituted that their officers can utilize, but on the other end, if you die in the line of duty, they have over 300% of programs to deal with those type of things. So they reward, bravery and line of duty and stuff. And it's all the same. And we kind of left there. I said, you don't think suicide's line of duty? I said, if anything, a lot of the suicides are because of what they did in duty. So obviously they are line of duty. It was the direct result of their job.
Since
they had no release, or they were shunned, or they were whatever it was, put them in. They didn't talk about their feelings. They think it's everything possible. It was line of duty. Absolutely was line of duty.
That's the argument that John Dowd made to the VA over benefits for guys who came back with. Most of them were TBI guys, TBI, PTSD,
right.
And his argument was, look, they were damaged fighting for their countries. That's why they didn't do these things, okay?
Yeah.
They were good men. They would certainly have taken care of their family and taken care of themselves financially, but they were, look at his behavior. He's broken at this point, and you can't withhold benefits because you broke him over there, and now, he didn't fill out this form, so you're screwed? Really?
Yeah.
And he won. He won. And so, case in point. The VA has recognized that he might have killed himself here, but that was...
Yeah, everybody does that.
Right? That was... What he died was a combat wound. That ultimately he DOW'd here in the United States.
Right, and people will argue, and when you say that, because I've said it before, he died of a combat wound. No, then you misunderstood. He died of suicide. Yeah, that's a combat wound. That is still a combat wound. He died of a combat wound, and here's why. When you get done with the explanation of it, of why he did do that, and then they're like, oh my God, I didn't think of it like that. And you're like, yeah. It amazes me that we do that. I mean, we're getting better, but You're still not the best.
But it's pretty cool, though, to hear somebody's feeling hopeful and, you know, and that's what, right? Journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go, boys.
First step off, right?
Right. Let's go, boys. Time to get after it.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on, Granberry? What are you doing? You're out roaming around. What are you doing? You're up. You're patrolling.
It's actually really nice right now, so I'm outside. Yeah, I was out. I'm by the police department. And then I was out running around, just getting some shit done. And then I forgot to get gas in my truck. Yeah. Because I was backing in and the light came on, and I was like, what the hell is that? Oh.
So you left the you left the garage and went back and got gas?
No, I haven't left again. So I just backed in. And I just found this, how does a golf ball, I live on a golf course, by the way, but, okay, so right now I'm standing between two homes,
right.
My home
right.
And the other home. I'm facing west, and there's a golf ball right here in my front yard. So I'm looking at the angle of, like, how this had to be like one of those John F. Kennedy bullets where it just like boom, 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 and then it right here. Because the tee is like completely, there's no way. I mean, it's crazy. But I find golf balls all the time.
Have you ever, do they hit off your house?
Off the roof every once in a while. You hear one, like, every once in a while. You know, like,
do you go out and glare at the foursome? I don't know who did that.
Yeah, you know, there's not everybody plays golf and good at golf, right?
Right, right, right. There's that guy.
Yeah. So, you know, every once in a while, like, well, put it this way, I don't go out in the backyard when they do they have female colleges. That's all the girls come out from the colleges.
Yeah.
And they play golf, like, tournaments. Fuck, man, there's golf balls landing everywhere. I mean, you just stay indoors. Unless you want to get hit with a golf ball. They're the worst. Whenever you see the young girls out here playing golf, you just like, run, get away, get away. So, but I have a bucket. So we collect them. And it's one of those popcorn buckets. You know, the plastic ones that you can...
Yeah.
In the movie theater.
And full of golf balls?
It's already full, brother.
Too bad you're not a golfer. You never have to buy balls. You could open up a little store.
And so, on your cell phone, if you looked at the picture I just sent you.
Did you text it to me?
Yeah, I sent it on a text.
Okay, I haven't got it yet. I haven't got it yet.
But it's a nice day out, man. It's a beautiful day. It's a slight breeze. It comes in from the still like southwest. But, yeah. And then I'm looking at all these, like, because it's been going warm, cold, so I got to go spray weeds for weeds. So, when spring comes in, I really so chills. So maybe I got to go out, get gas, and go low, get some weeder weed stuff.
Hold on, I'm looking.
Yeah. Okay. Dude, that's 1 year.
What is that?
Every year.
Is that a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket?
No, it's one of those popcorn
bins.
Buy the plastic thing and take it back, and you get like half off. I don't know.
Wow, those are probably really good balls. People playing at the country club, man.
Oh shit, yeah, those are really good balls. But we fill that thing up every year. At the end of the year, it's always full.
What do you
so
do with
on the back patio?
What do you do with the balls? Give them to somebody?
Yeah, we have some friends that play, and then when they come by, we're just like, here you go, here's your supply.
You know what? I like the first aid IFAC visual.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
Right, and it goes.
You got to have those certain things to take care of those certain injuries.
Right. And
that's what IFAC is beautiful about.
That's what we love the IFAC. But that's what makes just like the IFAC, you know, shit saves lives, man. The things that are in a first aid kit now today, if you've been out of the Marine Corps for a while, you would shit yourself if you saw a first aid kit. It is, they're incredible. But our point would be, when we say self-aid, buddy aid, Corman aid, you're still using the little green, the little greenie, right? When we talk about helping each other now. What we're going to, by the end of the day, you're going to have an IFAT for your mental health. Oh, shit.
Right. It's consistent of this stuff. These and these, and these are used for this type of injury. This is used for this. This is a kind of a universal thing. It's used for any type of injury. That's what you need. And again, another bit of visual, just like any other IFAC, the more it sits on the shelf and it's not utilized, it should go bad, or things change, and now you gotta look at the expiration dates of those, you know, of those bandages and get rid of them and get newer ones. And that's just the constant lifelong, you know, being a life learner, always understanding what's going on around you, building more and more tools, putting them in the toolbox, and be ready for those events. You know, never let them go dormant. Never let them expire. And as things change around us, you gotta adapt and overcome and find out another way to defeat it.
Email. Mac, you said you're not sleeping very much now because you wake up with all these things going through your mind. How's Mike sleeping? He doesn't sleep very good. He doesn't sleep very good anywhere. That
Mike
is true.
Doesn't sleep.
Mike doesn't eat. Dracula.
No, I mean, when I came back Monday night, when I came back home after our trip, and I went to bed, and I ain't shitting you, I went to bed like 7:48, and I fell asleep.
You fell asleep?
And it was one of the first, huh?
You actually fell asleep?
Yeah. And I slept until like 7 this morning, 12 hours. The last time I probably got 12 hours was when I was sedated in the hospital. You know? And I can't tell you the last time. But now, I mean, it's back to normal. So now I'm, you know, 1, 2 in the morning.
Dracula.
I still have a lot of things on my mind. So it's really, you know, one of the bad visuals was when we were talking to one of the staff members. And he was there the year before us, but it was the same road, Matt V. He struck a large IED in the culvert and totally destroyed it, killed some kids, and ejected the gunner. So I was there for that, and when I heard that, I was like, oh, shit, I was there. And then we talked about time. Then me and Mac were like, holy crap, that was the same type. I mean, then we realized that stretch of road, because it didn't have GBOS coverage, didn't have surveillance. They used to put shit in there all the time and blow our guys up.
He was talking about it, and Mike and I knew we said, yeah, between where the road V's in 11 Bravo, and then this is going up the right-hand side of the V, and between two firm bases that, Mike, they're not even, what, a half mile apart? I mean, they're close. And so on the map, you're like, there's no way an ID, and we're not talking small ID, we're talking about big ID. There's no way an ID can get in. And they did it twice. They did it twice.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny that, I mean, not funny, ha-ha, but funny, that, you know, he's describing it, and we know exactly where it was and the south side of, the south, east side of Marvin. So it's kind of interesting.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But that kind of brought back, you know, then I started thinking of stuff, and then, you know, I don't know, I just had images, and then, you know, like I said, if you've never walked up, if you've never been there, you know, right next to, like, when a vehicle goes off, and what a human body looks like when it's been blown up inside of a vehicle. It's just, that shit's like nightmares made out of, it haunts you for life. It's, you know, to see what blast overpressure will do to a human body, and you realize you are mostly water because you just, I mean, the body just explodes. I mean, it was like, just horrible, horrible, horrible injuries. And to see that and you think about that and you're like, oh God.
So do you have anything that you do? The guy who was on, what's the name? Cal Humphrey, Vietnam guy. He said, I don't lay in bed. I get up and I read. I read, it kind of takes my mind away. Do you do anything in particular?
I read. I read before I go to bed. So it makes me tired. But I don't, you never want to watch TV. TV does not do that. TV will never sedate you. You know, even a boring TV show will never sedate you. So I read. You know, I don't want to say this out loud because if he's listening, I don't want to give him any credit. But I started meditating like Josh, and that's made a big difference. So if I get a text message from him,
he's going to be with VA people all day today. So you're good right now. You know what? It was amazing. He would do this little meditation thing, and it was amazing how many Marines at the end of it looked around and went, "Wow, what was that?"
Yeah. That was pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Josh, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. All right, man, 10 o'clock's here. I'm out. What else you got going today?
No, I'm going to go get the weeder stuff.
Oh.
And spray for weeds. I can't put that off.
You can't? Why not?
That's what I've been doing with you. When I've been talking, I've been pulling some of them. But that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You gotta use chemicals, man. Spray.
Be careful what chemicals you use. Be careful with the chemical.
Yeah. I got one of those sprayers, like those big sprayers. You know? You pump, and then you put it on your side, you're a sling, and you got the big stick, and you're like, shh. Yeah, I love it. So, alright. Well, I'll talk to you tomorrow then.
Alright, bud. I'll talk to you. Thanks. There you have it. Michael Musselman. Chiming in. I will tell you, it is pretty intoxicating. One word, Benadryl, the cure-all for everything that ails you. The IFAC, man. If you go and look that up on the internet. In fact, go do a search on Vietnam first aid kit, and you'll see. You'll see what we're talking about. It is a joke, an absolute positive joke. But that's what I had. And then Google IFAC. IFAC, which stands for Individual First Aid Kit, IFAK. And go take a look at that. And you'll see all the different things that are in there. Everything from quick clot to tourniquets. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So check that out, and you'll see why the visual is so powerful. We're still trying to do mental health care with a Vietnam era first aid kit. All right, that'll do it. Tomorrow we'll get a chance. Jeff Zulowitz, who wrote all the articles in Navy Times about the Fitzgerald's, going to join me, and I'm excited in a bad way to talk to him, because you know we ask questions, and they were never satisfactorily. The question I still want to know is, where were the lookouts on the external part of the ship? So like, look, they could, and see, here's what happens. Kind of interesting. Here's what happens when the people in the ship have their heads up their ass. You have people on the outside of the ship saying, you know, are reporting plots. You know, there's, you know, 12 miles at relative bearing of 090. Okay, so that means he's off the right-hand side of the ship, amidship, right on the horizon. At least that's how they estimate it. So, you know, the people inside the ship will say, "Oh, I didn't know. We're not tracking that for whatever reason. The computer, you know, the radar didn't see it." And so you have this reconciliation that goes on. You know, where were the people on the outside of the ship? Do we not use them? Were they on the other side? Did they have their heads up their ass? Were they sleeping? So anyway, I'm very interested. I mean, if you read all four articles, as I said, you'll vomit. Okay, if you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. You'll hear the news next. And then after that, you're going to hear from Katie Beasley. Katie's a spouse at Camp DeJourn. She walked into post-traumatic winning knowing nothing about it and sent a really incredible email that, you know, I read it flying. And I'll read you the first two paragraphs as we go out the door today. Good morning. I was so fortunate to join you last night for the spouse PME held at the Camp Lejeune in Oak Cliff. Never before have I left the PME with mascara running down my face, proclaiming the event was life-changing. My husband, Zeb Beasley, is the CEO of 3-6. We spent the entire evening talking about the program and the mission of All Marine Radio. So, I mean, I hope everybody forgives Mike and Josh and I for being intoxicated by this experience. Because you just don't get that kind of stuff very often. So, thank you for listening today. Thanks for Katie for coming on. Thanks to Mike for calling in. And thanks, most of all, to you for listening. On a Wednesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.